Welcome back to another episode of Cohen's Corner. Today, Elizabeth and I will be joined by our very special guest, Katie Lowry. But before that, we're going to get into recent Mets news and give our opinions on what's going on with the team and what's going to happen in the 2021 season. So, Elizabeth, I'm sure you know that Carlos Carrasco, unfortunately, tore his hamstring last week, which means he's going to be out until, at the very least, mid to late May, which is a big blow to the rotation right now. I mean, it pretty much assures that Joey Lucchese will be the team's fifth starter after they sent down Corey Oswalt and Jordan Yamamoto. So until Carrasco comes back, it looks like Lucchese will be at the end of the rotation. And David Peterson looks like he's solidified the fourth spot for now. But what's your take on the Carrasco injury and what it means for the team going forward?
Yeah, that was – I mean, I guess the thing with the Carrasco injury is he was already, like, out due to he had had some other, like, elbow soreness or I think – or he – or I forget exactly, elbow, shoulder. But he was already kind of delayed, so it wasn't a huge surprise to me that he'd have some sort of setback. I didn't know it would be as serious as a torn hamstring. But, I mean, on one hand, it's a real shame. I think, obviously, he was kind of penciled in by many to be their number two or three starter to start the season. On the other hand, I mean, he is in his mid-30s, and so I think it's – I don't want to say unreasonable to expect that he wouldn't have been injured the whole season, but I think it's unreasonable to expect the Mets wouldn't have had, like, some starting pitcher be injured. And I do think they're definitely in a better position this year than they have been in years past to address that. I mean, I feel pretty good about the rotation even without him at the moment because I feel like, you know, we have DeGrom. And that barring, you know, hopefully – knock on wood, no one else gets injured. The rotation in its current state, I feel good about because you have DeGrom, you have Marcus Stroman, and thank goodness they signed Taijuan Walker. I mean, I think that signing looms hugely important now if Carrasco is going to be out for a couple months because rather than having maybe David Peterson, Joey Lucchese, and Jordan Yamamoto in the rotation, which without Walker might have been conceivable, now you have DeGrom, Stroman, Walker, followed by – it gives David Peterson a real good, you know – another solid look in at the major league level where I think he potentially could have started the year in the minors. I still think he would have been the fifth starter anyway.
Yeah, I don't understand why people want to start in the minors. He had such
Joey
a
Lucchese
really
had
nice
it locked in,
year.
Which exactly. I think Peterson already has a leg up that he's pitched with the Mets at the major league level, which Lucchese and Yamamoto have not, even though they've both pitched at the major league level. So on one hand, it sucks. On the other hand, I don't think it's crippling at this stage of the Mets season. Hopefully he comes back, you know, being without Carrasco for the whole year would be rough considering they just traded for him, but I'm sad about it, but I still feel good about the Mets pitching depth, honestly, even without him.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's a huge blow. I mean, a way bigger blow would be say losing another elite reliever like Trevor May or Edwin
Diaz. Don't speak it into existence.
I'm just saying. So yeah. To lose a guy from the rotation that it's already pretty much a strength. I mean, yeah. And thank God it's happening now. I mean, if this was June and or July and now Carrasco's out and we don't know if we'll be back for the playoffs. Hopefully we're even in contention for the playoffs.
Let's just get through April. I mean,
but it's good that it's happening like Lugo's injury. It's good probably that it happened early before spring training, you know, so that he'll be back at a decent time and you're going to get Carrasco and Syndergaard back in short order in May or June, whenever they both come back. And that's going to be a huge boost. You're right that the rotation probably is solid right now and they'll be okay. And with the offense they have, I think they'll be able to sustain it and hit enough that the rotation won't be as big of an issue. But it's going to be a nice shot when you get Carrasco and Syndergaard back in May. But it's Sandy and company, they've done a great job of adding depth, not only to the rotation, but offensively as well. But you're right, signing Walker was huge. Making that three-team trade for Lucchese was big. Getting Yamamoto was, you know what I mean? The depth, it's not going to be these huge names. I know people are upset that they didn't sign the likes of Bauer, Realmuto, Springer. I mean, I was too, but you know, it's not always about the flashy move because how many years did the Mets have nobody to lean on down in AAA that they're calling up Chris Flexen to make a start from AA because they have nobody else to pitch for them. So I think it's really important the depth that they've been able to build this offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you don't need a team of – you don't need a rotation of all aces. You don't need a team of all-stars. But it's really important to have solid major league depth where, you know, they don't necessarily need, like, five DeGroms in their rotation. But if you have DeGrom and, like, a bunch of other solid pitchers, there's you can just tell the difference between someone who has the ability to not implode every start and pitchers who you just don't trust at all. And I think just having pitchers that to this point have been solid. And you know, who knows with spring training, once you get into major league games, then things could differ. But I think to this point, I've been impressed with both Lucchese and Yamamoto and David Peterson for that matter. I know he had kind of a rough outing one of his last times out, but I mean, for whatever, he still instilled a lot of confidence in me. I feel like those 9 starts he made last year, I don't know. I'm a big believer in him. And I think he has the mental toughness and just the makeup to, I think, be a really solid starter. I think, you know, it's a shame that Carrasco's injured, but I think this gives David Peterson, for anyone who doubted him after last year, a chance to really prove that, like, once and for all, he belongs in a major league rotation permanently.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm very excited to see him prove himself. And I think he has all the capabilities to prove himself. He's a first-round pick out of Oregon. Alderson drafted him when he was here the first time. So they have a lot invested in him. And I don't think he gave you a reason to be scared last year. He attacked hitters. He went after guys. He threw strikes. And he had a good year. He had an ERA in the 3s as a rookie in a pandemic year where there was a lot going on and off the field. So I think he's going to be a big X factor for this team. But to get away from the rotation a little bit, obviously the big talk of spring training has been extending players that are going to be free agents at the end of the season. Stroman's going to be a free agent. Syndergaard's going to be a free agent. But the two main players that people expect to maybe get extended are Francisco Lindor and Michael Conforto. With Lindor, I'm cautiously optimistic that they will get an extension done before spring training, just because it seems like there's a lot of mutual interest on both sides. Lindor wants his payday, and it seems like he's so far enjoying his time with the Mets, and Alderson and company obviously
gave up Jimenez. I mean,
he's playing very well. I mean, he's always has fun, but considering they gave up two young shortstops in Rosario and Jimenez, it would be pretty foolish for the Mets to let Lindor walk, even though I understand all the high-level shortstop free agents there's going to be next year. But I said cautiously optimistic. I'm pretty optimistic that they will get a deal done with Lindor. But on the other hand, Conforto, considering he's a Scott Boras client, and although Lance McCullers signed an extension this week and he's also a Scott Boras client, it does happen once in a while that one of his clients will sign an extension, but more often than not, he likes to bring his clients to free agency. And I understand Michael Conforto said several times that Scott Boras works for him and it's not the other way around. Unless the Mets give a really good offer to Conforto, which I'm sure they will at some point, I expect him to be with the Mets long term. I'm not as optimistic as I am about Lindor that I am with Conforto that he'll be able to sign right now.
Yeah, I think Lindor has maybe I think him kind of giving that very firm, like, I will not negotiate, like, this is the deadline, otherwise I'm going to be a free agent. I think because, again, he was such a high, you know, a big splash move, I think there's a lot of, you know, I don't know if like public pressure has anything to do with this, but I think there's so much momentum towards wanting Lindor to be extended because he was just traded for. And so I agree. I'm like cautiously optimistic about that. We've heard, you know, they signed the extension with DeGrom 2 days before the season started. So I would say and that wasn't with Alderson per se, but there's certainly, you know, until opening day, it could happen. And so I will, until they step on the field next Thursday, there's a chance that he'll be extended before the season starts, in my opinion. So I'm fair. And again, he's spoken, you know, I think he knows his worth and he knows, but he also has spoken very positively so far of his time in New York and, or, you know, with the Mets, obviously in Florida
in
right
Port
now.
Port St. Lucie.
Yeah, exactly. New York of the South. But that's the thing. He's making it really difficult for them, like, not to want to extend him because he's played so well. He hit home runs in like 3 or 4 straight games. I mean, every time he swings the bat, especially as a lefty, it seems like the ball's going to go out. I mean, every one of his home runs has been an absolute like missile to right field, like complete no doubters. I don't know. And, you know, he's been solid in the field as well. And yeah, I think he's really endeared himself to all the Mets fans so far. He's said and done all the right things. I think there's been so much talked about and written about a Lindor extension that, I mean, the Mets front office has to know that people are really pulling and expecting for this to happen.
Oh, they know. They know.
I have to think that will play at least a small role in them wanting to get it done. Conforto, I agree. I don't think there's been as much. I mean, media members have asked him about it, and he has kind of not spoken too much about it, which I think
you can tell he's tired of talking about it.
I mean, I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all.
I don't either. I don't either.
But yeah, I think there's been less momentum about the urgency of getting a Conforto deal done. I do think it again, it does seem like he would love to stick around. So I also think, not that the team couldn't negotiate two huge deals before the season starts, I find it like somewhat unlikely that they will both get done, since they're both going to be like, you know, at least, you know, combined like $500 million potentially. So I find it like hard to believe that they would, I don't think they would both get done. I think Lindor is more likely. I'd love it. I'd love it if they extended both of them. That would be amazing. I don't think they will both happen, but I do think, I mean, what do I know? I don't know. I think Lindor will probably get done. Conforto, I'm less optimistic, but it's possible.
I think Conforto would have the chance too to possibly sign during the season. I know it's been more our deadline. I mean, I'm not saying it'll happen. I mean, I'm not optimistic that he would sign.
Yeah.
I just think from hearing Lindor, especially last week, was the first time he really said, if I don't have a deal by opening day, I'm going to free agency. So that was the first time. I mean, he kind of basically said it with what he had said in previous interviews, but he really specifically said that last week. Conforto, on the other hand, he's kind of given that vibe, but he hasn't given that real strict deadline. He's vaguely said that he wants to stick around. Yeah, he wants to stick around. And I mean, I can understand it from Lindor. And I mean, if I'm the Mets, I'm offering right now, offering him, I don't know, 10 for
whatever
two,
he wants.
10 for two,
that's what I'm offering.
Yeah, I mean, he's a beast. We need to keep him. Just watching him in spring training, you can tell how amazing
he's such a spark plug. You know,
he makes everyone better.
He fills the field with his energy.
He does. And it's just something the Mets have. I was actually talking to somebody about this today. It's that the Mets, in my lifetime, although I love David Wright and he was my idol growing up and he was a great Met, the Mets haven't had anything close to the player Francisco Lindor is, I don't know, I don't want to say maybe in their history, but in a very long time. What was the last thing they had somebody close to Lindor? Mike Piazza?
Piazza.
The last huge superstar, right? A superstar, but Lindor is a top 10 player in the sport. And I don't know if you can say the Mets have ever had that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not at shortstop, certainly. I mean, Jose Reyes was great. But yeah, Lindor, I feel like – yeah, I feel like – again, it's hard to say. I don't know if we're going to get a ton leaked about this until the deal gets done. So I don't really know. I mean, they kept the trade itself pretty much under wraps until it actually happened. I have a feeling if the extension does happen, we're just going to find out. I don't think there's going
to
be –
And that's like when DeGrom signed his extension, there was no talk – I mean, there was talk of people wanting to extend him, but – there was no talk of numbers being thrown around or anything.
No, there was no kind of back and forth publicly about it.
He's got a brand new deal, and it was kind of out of nowhere in a way. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see an alert on my phone over the next week. Lindor signs 10-year, 300, whatever.
Can't wait. That would be amazing.
I'm crossing my fingers.
Waiting for that one.
I hope for that. So, I mean, and I don't see them letting him walk. I mean, even if he goes to free agency, I mean, because what $300 million to Steve Cohen is pocket change over the next 10
it's
years.
It's two statues.
That's
two the pointing man statues, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
I'm not worried that we're going to lose him over time. I mean, obviously, if he goes to free agency, the Yankees are going to put their hat in the ring and it's going to be a mess. But I don't know. If he really enjoys his time with the Mets, if he doesn't get a deal done, if he enjoys his time this summer, I don't see him leaving.
I just don't want people to be like, be stressed though. I feel like Mets fans are going to be like, we have to just enjoy the season.
Yeah,
if he doesn't sign, just enjoy the season. Don't spend every day asking for 100%. An extension. That's what, you know what I mean? I don't want people to waste the season worrying
it's
about whether
drain
he's
him. If he has to hear about it all the time,
exactly.
You know, like, he wants, like he said,
it's like,
he wants the focus. It's not fair to him. It's not fair to the team. So yeah, you gotta even
game,
say worst case
focus,
scenario,
not the contract negotiation.
Year, say worst case scenario, we have him for 1 year. You still have Francisco Lindor on your team. You got to appreciate it for the time you have him, no matter how long it is.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, let's you know, it's great to talk about all this contract stuff, but once the season starts, if he hasn't signed, I have a feeling we're going to still see a firestorm of all about this whole extension situation, but I really would love to just enjoy our time with him, however long we have him. Same with Conforto, same with all of our players, you know, Syndergaard, Stroman, if they end up leaving at the end of the year. Let's enjoy the season with them and have a great year. And, you know, we'll see what happens with their future. But I want to just focus on 2021 too, because, you know, this could be a great year for the Mets. So let's just put our all into it. And I really think, you know, they have the players this year to be great. So whatever happens in 2022 and beyond, I'm very excited for this year. So it's a few days away. Can't wait for it to get started.
Yeah, I'm excited. And time will tell who stays around, who leaves, but let's just enjoy the ride. It's going to be a fun year, so let's just enjoy it. But now let's get into it with our guests. I'm very excited for you guys to hear from the lovely Katie Lowry.
Now we are very excited to introduce our special guest for this week's episode of Cohen's Corner. Today we have Katie Lowry on our podcast. Katie is a longtime baseball fanatic. She and I both interned at the Baseball Hall of Fame several years ago, so we're going to get into that. She has also worked as a hot dogger for the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, and we're also going to get into what that even means a little bit later on as well. And right now she works in development for a sports organization. She's a full-on hashtag woman in sports, and we're very excited to have her on. So Katie, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about this. Baseball season is, I mean, opening day is next week, so this is awesome. And I'm just happy to be here.
Awesome. So I guess we'll get started. You know, something we kind of ask a lot of our guests as well as ourselves we've talked about is, you know, I know, like I said, you've had a lot of different kind of sports and baseball related experiences throughout your life, but I'm curious. So I know you're from near Chicago in the Illinois area and grew up a Cubs fan. And so I'm wondering how you actually first kind of became a baseball fan or fell in love with the sport originally.
Oh man. I'm from Mount Pulaski, Illinois, which is a super tiny town in central Illinois. My dad is a huge Cubs fan. My mom is actually a huge Atlanta Braves fan. And that all started whenever she was a little girl. Her grandpa lived in Florida where the Braves used to have spring training. So she would go see him and just fell in love with the Braves. And then my dad is, you know, like just a diehard Cub fan. So I was really raised with it. When my parents were in high school, my mom was the only gal who collected baseball cards. And my dad like thought that was like the coolest thing. And so like they became friends and bonded over that and then eventually started dating and then like years later got married. And so I've just really been raised with baseball. My brother has always played baseball. And for a while, I played baseball with him. Like in our town was so tiny that we didn't have softball for girls until you got to fifth grade. So everyone played baseball growing up. Which like looking back was a wonderful experience. And I don't think I really understood kind of what that meant at the time. Because I mean, to be honest, like I like baseball a lot more than I like softball, but like being a girl, you're pushed into softball a little bit more. And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but baseball was always my favorite. And it was always my first love and my true love. But really, yeah, just my parents. And then whenever I got old enough, really, I think it was like high school time though. Whenever I like really, really was like, I want to work in sports, but I don't really know how to. I just know that like I can do a few things really well. I like history, I like writing, and I like baseball. Those three things I think go together incredibly well.
Yeah.
And so then whenever I went to college, like I wanted to be on TV. I wanted to do broadcast journalism. Thank God I did not actually pursue that. I took broadcast one my junior year of college, or like right after my sophomore year, and I was like, this is awful, I don't want to do this.
I feel like you'd be good on TV. I don't know, don't write it off. I feel like you could be very charismatic. I feel like
I can like talk, but I don't know. So I then was like, well, I gotta do, like I still want to do sports. And so I got like really involved in the University of Missouri's athletic department, and then saw the Baseball Hall of Fame internship was posted. Actually, I saw it my sophomore year of college, and I was like, there's no way I would get that. Like as it currently is, like as my resume currently stands right now, there's no way. Like I know that I could like beat anyone in like a round of trivia, but like that's not gonna get me the spot. And so I worked really hard my junior year, applied for it on the deadline of junior year, like January or whenever the application was.
I think it was
due,
like January 31st.
Yeah,
it was like the end of January. I remember working on it then too.
So I like applied for it the day it was due, submitted it, and then forgot about it. You know, and then like the whole interview process and whatnot happens. But I will never forget one of the questions that I was asked in my interview. And I'm sorry, I'm like going on like now like a long tangent, but.
No, you're our guest. You talk as much as you want.
Okay. One of the questions that I was asked was like, if I said the name Ricky Henderson to you, like, would you know who I'm talking about? And I remember at the time being like, not like offended, but I was like, oh my God, like, duh, yes. And like the A's had just named the field after Ricky Henderson. So I was like, well, yeah, I mean, like this just happened. And then after that, I was like, do people not know? Do people not know who Ricky Henderson is? Which, like, obviously people don't know who Ricky Henderson is. But I don't know. Like, to me, like, that was just, like, so second nature and, like, old hat. And, like, that was, like, my mom can still name, like, the starting lineup for the 1976 Reds. And, like, there's just all these things that I grew up with that I just, like, thought were so normal for other people in other households were not the case. And I don't know. I mean, I loved that. I still love that. And there's just nothing like baseball. It's America's pastime. I think you can tell the history of the United States through the game of baseball. And it's really hard not to love it, in my opinion.
It's so great that the both of you got to work at the Baseball Hall of Fame. Like, I can only imagine how great of an experience that is and the people you get to meet. And just as a huge baseball fan myself, I'm sure for you that was amazing and just kind of a surreal experience to be able to be there all the time and be like, wow, this is where I'm interning, this is where I'm working. Like, that's got to be a really cool experience.
Yeah, and Elizabeth, I don't know, like, what you felt, but at least for me, like, even when we would be, like, rushing to get there on time in the morning, like, yeah, when you still walk in the doors, you're like, holy cow. I know, I'm an intern.
They, like, watch, yeah, over you. Absolutely.
Yeah, and you walk through the plaque gallery and you're just like, what in the world? Like, it almost brings you to tears because it's just such a surreal experience. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, we had both like different positions at the Hall of Fame, but like, it's something that's like almost so indescribable.
It definitely has like a very, I feel like that video that they showed us on whatever one of the first days was, like the MLB Network video, where it's all the Hall of Famers coming to life, like at night, almost like a night at the museum type thing. And that's how it almost felt like during the day for me. I mean, Katie, you remember, but like, I would still go into the museum on like all of my off days and just like go through the entire museum. I basically tried to like soak in as much as possible. And I feel like it's one of those things where it really, just being steeped in not only baseball, but just a baseball museum, it gives you such an appreciation for kind of like what you were talking about, like how it's passed down from generation to generation. Because, you know, I, in my internship position, got to interact with a lot of visitors and members every day. And so just seeing like all these families walk through the door every day and just seeing kind of fathers and mothers passing their love for the game onto their kids, like in front of you, like it's happened. You know what I mean? Like the game is being passed on as you were watching. And I thought that was just like so powerful. Or seeing kids like light up looking at, you know, like a statue of Jackie Robinson, or going through like the Babe Ruth exhibit and just being like in awe that that was his uniform. I feel like it brings the game to life in such a beautiful way. Just seeing not only the exhibits themselves, but also people explain, you know, parents explaining things to their kids and just, baseball we talk about is such like a, I think it's such a generationally like emotionally powerful sport that people just like really emotionally connect with on a family level. And like, you know, I feel like it's always passed down through families. And seeing that like come to life in front of me every day was really powerful. And it's funny you mentioned the thing about like Ricky Henderson too in your interview, because I feel like you also definitely get into a bubble of being like, I can't believe people don't know who like such and such player yes. is. But then you realize that like, hey, you can be that person that educates the masses on like who these people are. Cause if you talk to like non-baseball fans, they like probably don't even know who Mike Trout is. They might know who Aaron Judge is. You know what I mean? So it's funny. Yeah. I definitely get into my head. I have to remind myself that like, hey, you know, friends that I know that don't follow baseball, like, don't know who these people are. Like, if I just drop this into conversation, it's like not gonna register. So definitely you have to like check yourself yeah. sometimes when you're steeped in it every day, not only at the internship, but also just like in life in general.
Yeah, no, yes. And well, and it's so interesting that you brought up like seeing people's reactions and that kind of thing at the Hall of Fame, because I didn't get to see that as much because, you know, my office was in the basement.
Yeah, exactly. And like the tunnels of like, yeah. I couldn't find my way around in the 10th week of the internship. I still like didn't know where to turn.
No, I would like have to like get up like into the corner of my desk to get cell phone service. Like there was no, I was having like hardly any interaction down there. But like hearing you guys talk about that and like still myself going up into the museum throughout the day or on the weekends or whatever and seeing it. And it's, yeah, it's just like such a cool experience because like baseball, I mean, largely the game has remained the same for so long that it's so cool to think that like, I don't know, like my grandpa was watching the same thing or a similar version of something that I am still so in love with.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know. It's awesome. It's just mind blowing.
And speaking of the Hall of Fame, do you have a favorite exhibit in the Hall of Fame or a favorite part of the Hall of Fame that stands out to you?
I do. I mean, I love the Women in Baseball exhibit.
Mm-hmm. Diamonds and Dreams for the win.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an incredible exhibit. I do remember that, I don't know if you remember this, Elizabeth, but they were supposed to show A League of Their Own that one random weekend. I think it was supposed to be like the 25th anniversary, and then it rained.
Yeah, and they canceled it.
And it got canceled, yeah, because it was supposed to be a double day field, and it was going to be like this huge thing and really cool. And I remember being very upset.
Yeah, I remember that. I had forgotten about that until you just mentioned it. But yeah.
And so like that movie and, you know, the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League is mentioned in the exhibit. My most recent trip back, I remember going in there, and I feel like every single time I go into that exhibit, I still feel like just overcome with emotion because it's an older exhibit. I think it's like 30 years old now.
Well, it was there when the movie was made. So yeah, it's so, definitely at least that old.
It's older. But like, I still feel like every time I go in, I'm like, wow, like this is obviously still so relevant. And it like directly applies to my life because I think of myself as being one of these women in sports and who's, you know, trying to do all of these great things that these women wanted to also do. But I don't know. I'm just so overcome with emotion in that exhibit. And then we took that photo, Elizabeth.
By F.M. Manley's plaque. Yeah. I remember. And we took one in that exhibit, but then the lighting was weird. So then we took it in the plaque gallery.
And then that photo is beautiful. It's like the lighting's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny in the Diamonds and Dreams exhibit, you know, something I was just thinking about as you were talking is like, it's amazing. There's actually, you know, since even we interned there a few years ago, there's so many more women to add to that exhibit. And it's amazing when you think about the last few years, women in baseball. I mean, even just the last year alone, like, you know, women like Alyssa Nacken, Kim Ng, you know, Bianca Smith, like all those women, I don't know if they're in there yet, but like it's cool to think that there's so many more women even than when like we interned there and took that picture that could potentially be added to that exhibit. And hopefully maybe they'll have to expand it, you know, who knows, but I'm excited to see kind of where I feel like that's due for, I don't know if like an update,
needs
but
a revamp,
that definitely needs to be kind of spruced up a little bit, just, you know, to add in more people and just modernize it a little bit. So I'm excited.
I completely agree. Well, it's interesting that we talk about that too, because I don't know if you are familiar with Veronica Alvarez. She's the women's national baseball team head coach. We actually just had a discussion with her today at work. She's on the spring training coaching squad for the Oakland A's as well. And she was like mentioned in all Major League Baseball's Women's History Month stuff, but I was like super unfamiliar with her. And then we talked to her today at work, and she's another one that's like, you know, she like speaks and she says two sentences about everything that she's done. And you're like, holy cow, this is so cool. And the game of baseball, like the future is so bright. And, you know, like women in 20 years, like who knows what's going to be the case and who knows what we're going to see when we look at coaching staffs, or is there going to be a woman manager? Like, are we going to see a woman umpire? Like what's going to happen? But like, I feel like we're in such a cool spot that we get to watch that and see that and like actually feel like we're going to witness it at this point.
Yeah, exactly. For sure.
You touched on earlier that you grew up a huge Cubs fan. So I'm curious as to what your experience was like as a fan in 2016. And I'd like to hear a little bit how you're feeling in 2015 when we beat you in the NLCS, but you can talk about 2016 if 2015 hurts you too much.
Here's the thing about being any Chicago sports fan. There is like, I feel no pain. If you're like, I mean, the Bears are so bad. The Cubs have been so bad. The Bulls have been so bad. The Blackhawks, until they started winning in like 2010, were bad. So like, really being a fan of any Chicago sports like kind of prepares you for like anything, really. So 2016 I think was super unique. So I went to the University of Missouri to school in Columbia, Missouri, and it is dead center between Kansas City and St. Louis. And so 2015 was huge on campus because of the Royals. And like, and that was awesome. That was cool to see. They, you know, they hadn't won in a long time. And
was
whatever.
It? Was it really?
I'm sorry.
No, it was not cool. It wasn't cool.
My take on it was like, St. Louis sports fans are sometimes incredibly insufferable. And so I was like, if it's got to be somebody, like, I'm okay with this in this moment. Because generally, Kansas City, just like Kansas City as a whole, is a lot more fun and bearable and exciting. So then 2016 comes around, and I remember it was homecoming for Mizzou, which is a huge deal at Mizzou. And so Saturday of homecoming was the, it was the NLCS. Yeah. Saturday of homecoming was the NLCS. And I remember I had never left a football game early in my life, but the Cubs were starting to play and my mom was there with me. And so we left the game early to go home, to go back to my apartment and watch. The Cubs obviously clinched to go to the World Series. I remember we like FaceTimed my dad and my brother who was at home with my dog at the time. So in a different story, our dog was named after Kerry Wood, who was the Chicago Cubs pitcher. Yeah. So our dog was named Woody and we got him in 2003 during the infamous series with the Marlins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Woody was really holding on. He needed to see a World Series win. So Cubs clinch, we're like all freaking out, you know, whatever. And then like the next week was just like, it went so fast. Like, I don't think I went to class. The Cubs were in the World Series. I was like, this doesn't matter. Nothing else matters. The Cubs are in the World Series. It was the week of Halloween. I remember I painted a long sleeve white t-shirt to be the W flag, hand painted it, wore it for like 3 days straight. And then I remember I watched the World Series. It was just me and one other person. Like, all my friends were like going to bars and going to different places to watch the game. And I was like, no, I cannot sit in public. I am too nervous. I like need space to pace. Like, I need space to like call my dad. I can't go around people. So I watched it with just one of my friends. And like, it was just, I don't even remember. Like, I remember then I called my dad and he was crying and I'd never seen him cry before. Not like happy tears anyway. And like, I remember the next day I still had my W flag t-shirt on. I remember the next day I was actually part of this organization and we were having lunch with the St. Louis Cardinals beat writer and I wore my W flag. It's Jennifer Langosch. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but... yeah. And I wore my W flag and I walked in to where we were eating lunch. And she's like, just starts bursting out laughing. And she's like, oh my God. But I like wore it everywhere. I was like ready to get in like fights with people on campus because there's so many St. Louis Cardinal fans. And like, they just talk trash all the time. And I was like, you people dish it out, but you can't take it. Okay. Like, you've got 11 World Series championships. Chill.
Those people are the worst that they can get all the time and they can't take it.
Yeah.
One time in 100 years, you get to talk some crap and they can't.
Yeah. Let me have this moment. Let me have it. And so, yeah, I'm like wearing that around campus, like whole day, like, cause there were a lot of Chicago kids too that went to Mizzou and like whole day, we're all just like, we don't know each other, but we're like, you know, yelling and having a great time. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it was, I mean, what, November 2nd, 2016? Because it was all a blur, all of it. I remember like my social studies teacher from high school was at game 5 and like I had another family friend who was at one of the games. And so, I mean, like I remember I had a test that week for one of my classes and I took like all my study materials with me to this bar but I like did not study a thing. And I remember I got like a B+ on the test. And I remember texting my mom being like, it's a sign, like the Cubs are going to win, like, because I didn't study and I still got a good grade. And she was like, you need to calm down.
That's how I felt. Yeah.
Relax.
When the Mets were in the World Series, especially like the year before, it's like, I went to the University of Virginia and you know, there's like maybe like 3 Mets fans at the University of Virginia. Like, not that. So I remember walking around grounds, like wearing my Mets shirt, just kind of like feeling myself. But Mets fans like came out of the woodworks when they were in the playoffs this year. People were like yelling out of cars at me being like, hey, nice shirt. I'm like, I'm just like going to class, but like, thank you. No, it was like a terrifying experience being like alone at school. Like, cause then, that was my first like year away from home, you know, cause I like obviously grew up in New York and of course, that's the year they like go to the World Series and I'm like not with my family to talk about it. Like no one cares around me that they're in the World Series except for me. So I'm just like watching in my dorm room. Like it was like all that whole thing was like a blur. So I can definitely relate to like being too nervous to like be in public or just feeling like your stomach is just like about to explode. So definitely. And they didn't even win. So then it like sucked after that. So it's fine. But
yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. I brought up the Royals.
No, it's fine. I mean, look, the Royals are bad right now, so I don't really have anything against them at the moment. I'm not going to harbor too much resentment, honestly. They were the better team.
Are the Cubs going to trade Chris Bryant? What do you think?
I think the Cubs should have traded Chris Bryant 2 seasons ago.
Ooh.
A year or two. I think his trade value has severely dropped, and I love him. Above all, I think he's a phenomenal human being. I don't think anyone would ever argue that. But I don't know, like, what they can necessarily get for him right now. But yes, I think eventually, whether it comes at the end of the season or around the trade deadline, yes, I think they will, especially because the Cubs are kind of cleaning house anyway. So.
And this is the last year of his contract, right? He's a free agent after this year.
So I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they were going to trade him in the offseason. I mean, you can ask Elizabeth. I was rooting hard for the Mets to trade.
Literally.
You
tweeted about it like every week.
Yeah, I wanted. I wanted him bad.
And there were all these articles.
JD Davis, but I love me some JD Davis too, but Chris Bryant, that'd be a nice addition at third base.
There were all these articles in like January from reporters who were like, if Chris Bryant isn't traded by the end of the weekend, I'll like eat my hat, and because they were like so sure he was going to be traded. And I'm like, okay. And then people were responding being like, it's been 6 weeks since you said you were going to eat, or like whatever. Just, people were like so sure back in January that it was right around the corner, and then it still hasn't happened. So yeah, I mean, at this point, it seems like it's not going to happen until maybe the trade deadline. I don't know. I feel like it was interesting because I think a lot of the trade rumors around Bryant centered on him and Kyle Hendricks, which, again, I remember I texted you like on opening day last year when Kyle Hendricks threw the complete game. I was like, okay, I'd like never watched him pitch, but he's amazing. Like, he's so underratedly good. I was like really rooting for the Mets to make that trade, like 70% for Kyle Hendricks, like 30% for Chris Bryant.
Yeah, he's really, really good. And he, I mean, he'll be the Cubs opening day starter this year, but he's like, he like went to Dartmouth, and like, he's got, like, I mean, they call him the professor, like, for a reason. But he's been sneaky good for, I mean, really since, like, 2016, and no one has ever really paid attention. But, like, I think that's just kind of his, like, persona and his personality.
He doesn't throw hard, too. That's the thing. You're not seeing, like, videos of him throwing 101, because I feel like, you know, matter
he's
what.
Like Greg Maddux type. That's,
yeah.
That's what I was just about to say. He's very Greg Maddux-like.
Yeah, very Greg Maddux-like. And, I mean, he was obviously overshadowed when you had Jake Arrieta being dominant and winning the Cy Young, and then you have Yu Darvish. There were bigger names in the rotation that may not have been better than him, but were probably getting more attention. And with the strikeouts so high in baseball now, and a lot of pitchers judged on their strikeouts, I mean, he wasn't getting the attention all the time that he probably deserved.
Yeah, I completely agree. And yeah, and I think so much of it too just goes back to like who he is as a person. Like, I mean, like Yu Darvish is on Twitter, and you know, every once in a while, like everything he says goes super viral. And Jake Arrieta is like a whole personality beast of his own, and he's just Kyle Hendricks is just not that. I think he's very like an old school baseball player. Like he would have been
all
so
baseball.
Common.
Yeah,
he would have been so common like, you know, 40-50 years ago, but that's just like not the game now, which is totally fine. And like I would argue, I think I'm a person that like I want to see, like one of my favorite commercials ever was that Ken Griffey Jr. spot where it was like let the kids play with like their like boisterous personalities.
Yeah.
You want to see, you know, all these young guys do that crazy stuff. And I love that. I think that's amazing. I think that's good for baseball. But, yeah, that's just not him.
How do you feel about the whole, like, Yu Darvish trade situation?
You know, I like Yu Darvish. I think that it was going to be too much money probably to keep him in the long run. Because, I mean, like, Cubs still owed him millions of dollars. And I think that, like, the whole idea in Chicago right now is, like, we need to offload so many of these guys. And so it made sense. And I think it makes a ton of sense for the Padres to take him. Because the Padres are definitely in, like, a we want to win now kind of phase. And if they've got the money and they want to spend it, you know, more power to them. But I think it made sense at the end of the day. Like, did it kind of sting a little? Sure. But it's a game and a business.
Speaking about another Cubs player, or former Cubs player, I should say, like Yu Darvish is. Can you give Mets fans a bit of your opinion on Albert Almora and what he's going to bring to the team? Obviously, he's just going to be a bench guy for them probably, but what's your opinion on Albert Almora?
I really liked him. I think he's a good – like, he's going to be a good clubhouse guy, good morale. He's a good player, too. Like, I think he will do anything to help a team win. He's just very, like, I think he's just, like, very team-first kind of focused kind of guy. And, yeah, so I was sad to see him go. I also understand why, but I think he's a great get for the Mets. I would be really happy with it just as a bench guy. And, I mean, he's someone who's been part of an organization. Because I would say, like, the Cubs, the Mets, the Yankees, the Red Sox, like, there's all these, like, franchises that are very storied. And, like, the Mets play in New York City. So there's people watching all the time. They're getting scrutinized all the time. And I think Albert will be a very good player to have in the clubhouse to maybe kind of help some of the younger guys deal with some of that. I like it. I think it's good.
Yeah, he's impressed me so far in spring training. He's gotten a decent amount of playing time, even though he's considered to be like the fifth outfielder. It's interesting because I feel like the Mets and Cubs almost swapped like outfielders, because now Jake Marisnik's on the Cubs, who was on the Mets like last year. He didn't play a ton for them last year because he got injured, but it'll be interesting to see how both of them fare in their new domains.
Yeah, and I think he just did pretty well yesterday, 2 days ago. I don't remember now the last time I watched, but yeah, I think he's going to fit in nicely as well. So I guess we'll see what happens.
So I kind of want to get to something that I know is pretty unique thing that you've done. And you're going to have to give some explanation for this. So at the beginning of our segment, I mentioned that Katie worked as a hot dogger on the Wienermobile. And I know this led you to a lot of really fun kind of baseball related experiences. But for everyone listening, could you just explain like what this was? Cause I know this was kind of a wild year just in terms of, you know, you were in different cities like every week, and I know it was kind of a whirlwind. So first just explain what you actually did as a hot dogger, and then we can dive into like some of the baseball experiences that you had as a result of that.
Yeah. So from June 2018 to June 2019, I was an Oscar Mayer hot dogger. I was part of the 31st class of hot doggers, although the Wienermobile has been around since 1936. So there were 12 of us who were chosen to pilot the iconic Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, and we were on a coast-to-coast weenie roast, spreading miles of smiles all across the United States.
You still remember it. That's good.
That sounded so, like, I haven't said that out loud in 2 years, and it sounded so natural, didn't it? But it's honestly, you're like a traveling PR firm. So it's you and one other person, so you've got a partner. And you're pitching all the media whenever you roll into town. So, like, we went to Charlottesville, Virginia.
You were there? Yeah, I remember you were there. And I was like, oh, my God, I saw you on Snapchat. I was like, hey, let's hang out. And I don't think we could. But
it's like the Wienermobile schedule is so bizarre, which we can talk about that. But I tried to get the Wienermobile stuck, like, under that, like, viaduct thing. Like, quad area.
And that has destroyed many trucks over the years.
Had to stop traffic for, like, a half. It was pretty bad. My partner was, like, really embarrassed. And I'm like, who cares? Whatever. So, anyway, yeah. It's a PR firm on wheels. You're pitching all the media when you go into town. You are handling all of your event scheduling. You're doing a lot of social media. It's really just, like, a whole gamut of marketing, and it was a ton of fun. I loved it. And in that, we did do a lot of stuff like with NASCAR and the NHL, because those were like corporate sponsors, or we were corporate sponsors of those leagues. And then, but while we were at it, we did go to a lot of baseball games, and we got to see I think I went to like 4 or 5 new stadiums. I was lucky that I had partners who really wanted to go to both baseball and basketball games. So I got lucky in that. But I think, oh my God, now I went to 30 states in a district, because we went to DC. So we were always like super weird about that, but it was incredible. It was some of the most fun. And I think I learned a lot, both like professionally and personally. And I recommend that, like, if you have the chance to drive the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, you should do it.
There you go. So what do you think, what was like your favorite like new stadium that you went to?
I loved Camden Yards, or Oriole Park at Camden Yards, whatever like the official name is. I absolutely loved it. We were in Baltimore for a little less than a week, I think. And that was my first time that I had ever been there. And we were staying pretty close to the stadium. So I think I walked even. I don't know. Yeah, I think we walked, and I don't know. And like, it was just really, really pretty. And like, I mean, the weather was beautiful that night. I could not even tell you who the Orioles were playing. I could definitely look it up, because I remember the day, but they might have been playing like the A's. I don't know. But I remember sitting there, and like, nobody was there. I mean, maybe 5,000 people. And their PA announcer is a woman. I remember the first time I heard her come over the intercom, I was like, whoa, what's going on? This is a cool experience. But like, everything that I knew about that stadium, like, was like from watching like old Cal Ripken Jr. videos and stuff. So then like to see that in person was kind of like a little trippy, but still really cool. And they've got this beautiful like walkway situation in between where you see like all the brick, like the brick buildings, like in the outfield. There's like a space in between there where you walk through. And I just thought that was gorgeous. But yeah, I even bought a hat. I loved it so much. I was like, this is amazing. I love this place. Go Orioles. Yes.
We can all be bandwagon yeah. Orioles fans. It's
like,
fun.
We're all, yeah. Like, but yeah, I loved that. I thought that place was amazing. And then where else did we get to go that was really, really cool? I mean, I guess now I cannot remember. SunTrust Park, the Braves' new ballpark. Is it Truist? I think
it's
Park
called Truist Field. Now. It was just yeah. renamed like a year or two.
Yeah, and it's only like 3 years old to yeah. begin with. I mean, that one's beautiful. They're just cool too because they've got a ton of restaurants and things to do like immediately right beside the ballpark, which anytime a team does that, I'm like, oh, you're just literally ripping off Wrigleyville. That's what's around Wrigley Field and has been for 100 years. So I loved that. Oh my God, now I'm drawing a huge blank. But Camden Yards was amazing. I don't know if either of you have been there.
Yeah, I've been there a bunch of times. I like it a lot just because it's such like a small, like compact stadium. It's different than these huge stadiums you see. It's small. It's right next to the football stadium, which is really cool.
Yeah.
They have the warehouse in right field, and in right yeah. field on the pavement, it shows like who's hit home runs that have landed certain distances on the ground. I think that's really cool. And it's just a really cool family feel type of stadium.
Yeah, you just put it more concisely than I did. And it's like the first new age stadium, is that right?
Yeah.
But now it's old because it's like 30 years old. Yeah. Yeah.
But if you went, you wouldn't even think of it as an old stadium. Like when you went to Shea after Shea was there for 40 years, whatever, you're like, wow, this is a dump. You know what I mean? But you go to Camden Yards and it's still as gorgeous as ever.
Yeah. And I did get to go to Shea Stadium. I've been to Shea Stadium and City Field. City Field a couple times now. But yeah, I remember Shea.
I love Shea.
I'll leave it at that. Shea. I remember Shea.
Good old Shea. Mets fans always like to say, even Mets fans who were like too young to be saying this will always be like, oh, Shea was a dump, but it was our dump. Like, I don't know why that phrase is like very common throughout the Mets lexicon. So yeah, hopefully, you know, like I said earlier, so excited for baseball to be back. I really hope I'll get to like go to a few games this year. I really missed going last year, and you know, hopefully Katie, you can go to some games too. Hopefully the Cubs are good this year for your sake. And yeah, well, I guess we'll wrap this up. First, before we sign off with you, I do want to let our listeners know where they can find you on social media. So if you want to plug any like Twitter, Instagram, whatever else you're doing on social media, feel free to let people know where they can follow you.
Yeah, just follow me, Katie Lowry, CadyLowery on both Instagram and Twitter. If you feel so inclined, I post a lot of dumb things that I think are really funny.
The best endorsement possible for any content. So, yeah. It's dumb. Yeah.
It's pretty stupid. You might like it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Katie. We had such a fun discussion with you, such a wide range of baseball related topics. And yeah, we're so happy you could be on with us. So thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you so much for having me.